The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
That was the accumulating scientific data that prompted the CDC to make that recommendation that when people are vaccinated, they can feel safe that they are not going to get infected.
You're safe if you're vaccinated. So says the man who's now, he's quadruple jab. He's come down with the COVID. So what goes around comes around. The Frankenstein monster has finally turned on its creator, Dr. Fauci. He comes down with the COVID. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio. They play some replays on Channel 3 of that platform and also Channel 6. But to get to the live video stream of this show, you've got to go to our very own website. That would be thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. Takes you right to the live stream page. And also we post the last 3 weeks of programs in case you need to catch up on your TD viewing. So the other day, let me just turn this off. We're doing this live in my camper. We're at an RV park. I've always wanted to come to the panhandle of Oklahoma. I spent the night in Guymon, Oklahoma. We're about 2 hours away from Amarillo, where we'll be hearing or seeing Celtic Throne just tonight. And so, so you heard about Rapid City. Oh boy, hopefully, Sam, are they hearing this? Because I wonder how you disengage this. I turned it off, but the alerts are coming in on my iMessaging. Hopefully you're not hearing it on your end. In any event, okay, it's just going to be an annoying thing for me because I don't know how to disengage that. In any event, we're on our way to Amarillo. I think there's 519 that are tuning in for the show this evening. Hopefully we'll sell a few more tickets today. I think last year in Amarillo, we had about 600 or almost 600. So we're running at about the same level as last year. After Amarillo tonight, I'll be making my way home to Edmond this weekend. So we'll be back in the studio on Monday. And I appreciate all of the subs filling in. Sam on Monday, Dwight Falk coming in on Wednesday. And then, we've gotten some really good email feedback. If I have some time on today's show, hopefully we can cover that a little bit later on as well. If you'd like to email the show, by the way, just email us, td@thetrumpet.com. So I mentioned we got some good feedback on the show we did in the hotel room on Tuesday, which was a very simple and small room. This is even smaller. Obviously, the background's not going to be that interesting for you, but it's the best that we can do. And I will say this, the IT guys back in Edmond, including Sam and everyone with the Trumpet Daily team, they have set me up with all the equipment I need to make sure that we can connect to the internet while we're on the road, to make sure that everything I have while traveling is battery powered in case we don't have electrical hookups. So yeah, this will be a good test to see if everything is in working order. And then if everything works well with today, well, who knows what we could do from here on out. It's just exciting to think about how many shows that we can do really from anywhere in the world. So Anthony Fauci, he got the quadruple jab, right? He got the two vaccine boosts or jabs. Then he got the third as a booster. Then he got the fourth one. And you see him, you know, wearing a mask pretty much all the time, except when he's at a baseball game and people or he thinks that there's no cameras on him. In any event, he's supposed to be the one that's really not just enforcing the rules, but practicing them. The quadruple jab, he wears face masks, he does a lot of his meetings through Zoom, and yet still, he gets the COVID. He gets the Wuhan flu. He gets the Wuhan virus. And he was working, his people were working with the Wuhan team. to create this. This is in PJ Media. It says Dr. Fauci is the architect of the nation's COVID-19 response and was once the most trusted figure when it comes to the novel coronavirus. However, his repeated contradictions and deceptions have resulted in Americans losing confidence in our health institutions, it says, and prompted calls for his firing. For example, Fauci was told that COVID-19 was potentially engineered, but instituted for over a year, that it came from nature. He also lied about funding gain-of-function research in Wuhan and about herd immunity, and he pushed for universal masking despite knowing that masks are not effective protection from COVID. So all the lies, he's been thoroughly and completely discredited. And he's our chief health expert. Listen to him. I gave you the quote where he said that, hey, you take the vaccine, you're protected. You're going to be protected. Listen to him talking about the effectiveness of the vaccine. And there were those saying, well, look, you rolled it out so fast. I mean, does that take away from its effectiveness? And according to the good doctor, no. It's as effective as you would expect it to be coming from us. I mean, we're the experts. This is clip 8.
As you know, there's still a lot of skepticism about the vaccine. I was just talking to a couple of members of our crew here. And I guess the basic question is, how can we be sure it's safe when it was developed so quickly?
The speed was not at all at the sacrifice of safety. The speed was the reflection of extraordinary advances in the science of vaccine platform technology. To be able to do things technically in months that some time ago, 5, 10 years ago, may have taken several years. So people understandably are skeptical about the speed. But we have to keep emphasizing speed means the science was extraordinary that got us here.
Yeah, it was just extraordinary. Extraordinary. The way that it all came together, the way that they rolled it out. Never mind. I don't even have time to get into it. But never mind all of the COVID side effects. That's something that's being carefully covered up and downplayed by the mainstream media, the propaganda press. But here he is. This man should have been out of office or out of his position months and months and months ago, but he's still around and he has the COVID. It's just perfect, isn't it? You can't make this up. You really can't. So what are they going to do? We're in the middle of June. What are they going to, coming into midterms, what are we, 4 or 5 months away from the midterm elections in November? What will they have coming into this? If they can't scaremonger with respect to the Wuhan flu, if they can't scare you into voting from home, and to make sure that together with that, they're able to send out tens of millions of ballots all over the country. If they can't do that, how are they going to steal any of these elections? And so many of them, of course, this is not a presidential election coming up in 2022, but so many of these elections are going to be, they're going to be, you know, just in small districts from all over the country, the House of Representatives, for example, and the states tightening up the election laws and just poll watchers. How many Republican poll watchers are going to have their eyes like eagles on everything that's going on in Detroit, in Atlanta? And of course, these aren't even necessarily the hot spots with respect to the House of Representatives. If they don't have scaremongering, what will they turn to? Well, I discussed this to some degree yesterday. I believe Dwight Falk got into this on yesterday's program as well, or I did 2 days ago. But they're going after Donald Trump. That's what this show trial is all about. They're not only wanting to put Donald Trump, they want a criminal referral. So even though Benny Thompson, the one that's heading up that partisan committee of just all Democrats, if you can believe it, and then the media, they play along as if this is legitimate. Nancy Pelosi wouldn't even let a Republican on that committee. The two that are there are just Republicans in name only. They're Democrats. They're Obama acolytes, Cheney and Kinzinger. So it's basically 9 radical Democrats trying to pull up enough evidence, the way they see it, quote unquote, you could say, enough evidence to put Donald Trump in jail. Adam Schiff, if you can believe it, Adam Schiff is on this committee. Remember, he's the one that heard all of those testimonies that weren't yet released to the public, and he came out in front of the cameras, and Schiff said, "We have got the goods." Oh, yes. We have got the goods. Absolutely, Donald Trump is a Russian agent. Of course he is. And then what does Schiff do after he's thoroughly discredited and embarrassed when the facts do come out, when Mueller comes out with his report and all of the commentary thereafter? Well, he still is as prominent as ever as far as Democrats are concerned. You can lie and lie and lie repeatedly. You can just lie on an endless loop. And here he is. He still shows up in this committee, as you would expect. Listen to Adam Schiff talking about what they've supposedly turned up in their investigation. This is clip five.
I certainly believe there's enough evidence for them to open investigations of several people. And so does Judge David Carter in California, who believes that the former president and others were engaged in likely multiple criminal acts. If the Justice Department concurs with Judge Carter, let alone my own view, or others, they should be pursuing that. And so, yes, I think there is sufficient evidence to open an investigation. And it would be up to the Justice Department ultimately to decide, does that evidence rise to proof beyond a reasonable doubt such that they're comfortable indicting someone? But there's certainly, in my view, enough evidence to open investigations.
So in his view, there's certainly enough evidence to open up an investigation. Liz Cheney wants that criminal referral. Never mind what Benny Johnson said. He's basically pulled away from it or distanced himself from that, saying that, look, we're not an investigatory body. We're basically just looking into what happened here. And it's on the DOJ to look into this further. But look, when you've got Merrick Garland there, when you've got Joe Biden, occupying the White House, when you've got Barack Obama behind the scenes, again, they're not going to take this coming red tidal wave lying down. They knew it was coming in 2020. They knew how popular. Remember that rally in eastern Pennsylvania, where it was something like 50 or 60,000 people turned out to see Donald Trump? They knew. They had Joe Biden tucked in the basement. They had their plan in place. They didn't need Biden to go out. They had all the mail-in ballots out there. They had all the mules ready. Never mind, Bill Barr laughing at that movie. They had the steel in place. They knew they were going to pull it off. Now you have to wonder, what are they thinking as they come into this election? They're panicking. They're really reaching. They're desperate. You see it in the committee. This partisan committee, and you see it in some of the commentary as well. Listen to this commentator on MSNBC, clip four.
We've got to give them a reason to feel they have skin in the game, that this is important to them, that losing democracy is important to them. And whether or not it be telling women that, you know what, women, you think you're losing your rights now? What do you think is going to happen if we don't have democracy? You know what, African-Americans, particularly African-American men who are showing the lowest motivation to turn out in this midterm, you think things are tough for you right now? Where do you think you're going to stand in a country, in America, where there's no democracy, where they have absolutely no interest or at all in respecting your rights? We've got to get that these people understand that they've got skin in this game, and we got scared the hell out of them, because quite frankly, Nicole, they should be afraid that we're going to lose our democracy.
Because that is what's on the line.
So we got to scare minorities into voting. It's amazing. These are the same people that have for years said that Republicans are out there fear-mongering, scaring people. And now you hear them. They say the quiet part out loud. They come on the TV networks and they say, we've got to scare the blacks. We've got to scare the Hispanics. And think about what happened in this little congressional district in South Texas. What's her name? Republican Myra Flores. She's a Trump, not just any old Republican. She's not a rhino. She's a Trump Republican. She's Mexican born. She's in this, it's an open seat. She's only going to occupy it until January of 2023. I forget how it was left open. In any event, they have this special election. She's in a district that's 85% Hispanic. Just try to wrap your mind around this for a second. Because all of these commentators trying to scare the minorities into voting at the same time are saying that the Trump Republicans are racist. They are white supremacists. And so how do you explain this Hispanic candidate in a largely Hispanic area winning, going away? It's not even close. Here are all these Hispanics in South Texas saying, I'm going to get behind Trump. And blacks are doing the same thing. Asian Americans, same thing. This is going to be, if it were fair, this is going to be a landslide in the favor of Republicans by epic proportions. No doubt about it. If the Democrats lose minorities, and this is why you have the talking head coming on TV saying, hey, we got to scare people. We got to scare them into voting. They're actually voting for Donald Trump and his policies. Listen to this take from that special election. This is, again, Myra Flores, who beat her Democrat challenger pretty easily in a Hispanic area, an area that's 85% Hispanic. This was MSNBC's take, clip 10.
This speaks to a story we've been talking about since the 2020 election, specifically along the border, the Rio Grande Valley, South Texas. We have seen county after county, whether it's in this district or some of the districts to the west of it, where voters have moved 10, 20, 30, 40 points away from the Democrats and toward the Republicans. This district that Myra Flores won last night, Barack Obama got more than 60% of the vote here when he last ran in 2012. Hillary Clinton won this district by 22 points. It's shifted that dramatically. Joe Biden carried it by 4 in 2020, and now in a special election, a Republican candidate has won it outright. This, by the way, is the second most heavily Hispanic congressional district in the United States.
Wow. I mean, it's just heavily Hispanic. What a transition. Even going from Hillary Clinton in 2016, where she took like a 20% plus in this region, Biden won it by 4, so it was already trending in the direction of Donald Trump. But now this special election, and keep in mind, as a backdrop to this, we're supposed to believe that Joe Biden pulled in, just a year and a half ago, 81 million votes. The most popular president in U.S. history. We're supposed to believe. You can look at little stories like this one and see, and no, of course they stole it. People can laugh all they want about the way they went about it, and they used a lot of different ways to complete the steal, to pull it off. But of course they stole it. You drive, as I said the other day, you drive across middle America, and you see how strong the support is for Donald Trump. You see just how strong the contempt is for this illegitimate administration. So as I say, it puts the Democrats are really in a difficult position. They see the dreadful economy. I mean, look at what the Fed did yesterday. It's later on in my notes, raising the rates on the attack on the oil industry continues. Fed makes the biggest interest rate increase in over 25 years. They're desperate. They're reaching. They're grasping for straws, trying to find any way that they can to fix what Joe Obama has damaged. And of course, it's all by design, isn't it? It's exactly what Joe Obama wants. It's exactly what Barack Obama envisioned, that all of these costs for energy would necessarily skyrocket. Those are his exact words. So that we can move toward green energy, solar energy. Here's the cost at the pump, $5 to $6 per gallon. $5 to $6. I think it's even in this part of the world where it's a little bit cheaper, it's, I think, $5.50 for diesel. And if you haven't noticed, all these trucks that are transported, you talk about supply chain crises, all of these trucks traveling the nation, they load up every stop on diesel. And so no wonder the cost for everything is skyrocketing. And yet these green energy fanatics would tell you, we just have to move away from fossil fuels and move towards solar energy, as if a solar panel is going to power your vehicle. I guess it's just electricity, but solar panels, they don't even factor. And then don't even get me into how they make the batteries for the electric cars and so on, and how fossil fuels are used in industry right across the board. So their plan, nothing gets solved. Everything just continues. And here we are in a nation of 330 some million people. And just like this, we're going to overnight switch to electric and solar panels. When you see more and more of these wind turbines as well, even scattered around the Midwest, half of them don't seem to be functioning when you drive by, but let that go. It's incredible to think about just how bitter the affliction really and truly is. And when you think about the difficult position that the communists and the media are in, they see Joe Biden. They see his poll numbers. They see, in some cases, they see what he's done. When you start losing, I mentioned minorities, when you start losing blacks, Hispanics, and Asian Americans, and when you start losing CNN, what does that say? Again, Obama's in the background just rubbing his hands because everything's playing out. And guess who the fall guy is? It's the puppet. It's Joe Biden. He's the one that's made to look like a fool. And yet, as I say, it's Barack Obama in the background pulling the strings on this puppet. Listen to CNN, though, as they turn on Joe Biden. This is clip two.
This is the worst consumer sentiment ever measured by the University of Michigan, going all the way back since 1952.
Wow.
Well, it's pretty clear why they're feeling this bad, and that is because the consumer price index is the worst it's ever been in a midterm cycle since 74. It's the worst it's been in any presidential cycle or midterm cycle since 1980. So it's not much of a surprise. You can see it. It's literally off the charts on the table on your screen.
And how does President Biden's performance rate?
Awful. Look at the disapproval rating Joe Biden has on inflation right now. Wow. It's over 70%. Carter was not even there at this point in mid-1978. When you're doing worse than Jimmy Carter's doing in the minds of Americans on inflation, you know that they're holding you responsible for the conditions that are currently on the ground that are hurting Americans in their pocketbooks.
This administration, including the president and some of his closest economic advisors, got inflation wrong.
I think everybody is looking very closely now. When he does badly, when he stumbles, you get nervous. And you wonder, is it just a stutter? Is he tired? Or something else there.
And we interview the president. We watch him in press conferences. We watch him do interviews on, he was on Jimmy Kimmel the other night. And quite frankly, I had trouble following him. His answers are not succinct. And I understand that he is an issue as a stutter as a child. I interviewed him several times leading up to when he was running for president, and as president of the United States, I've interviewed him. And he has trouble sometimes connecting, and his answers sometimes don't make sense.
Can you believe this is happening? This is actually happening in the United States of America. And now they're acknowledging, some of these talking heads, they're acknowledging the obvious. What is wrong? He doesn't even make sense. He's worse than Jimmy Carter. Joe Biden makes Jimmy Carter look like Abe Lincoln. Joe Biden, easily, he's right there at the bottom as the worst in U.S. history. Jimmy Carter, to his credit, he was a liberal back in the late 70s. At least he was pro-American. At least he loved his country. America voted him out and got in Ronald Reagan there at the turn of the decade. And you know some of the history there with skyrocketing costs for fuel and the Iran hostage crisis. But look at today. Look at the Afghanistan withdrawal. Look at the economy today. And never mind what Joe Biden says about how that when he travels the world, world leaders come up to him and say, yeah, it's good to see America back. He's just lying. They are laughing at America. They have no respect for this president because they know it was stolen. They know he's just a bumbling fool. That's what's the reality. It's like 2 Kings 14 says, this is bitter affliction. You have to keep trying to view all of this through the lens of Bible prophecy. This is bitter affliction, and Satan, of course, is working behind the scenes to even try to blot out the name of Israel. And he's got his man, that would be Barack Obama. He's got an Antiochus administration, And isn't it convenient for Obama, just like he joked at the end of 2020, that he can be down in the basement in his sweatsuit and he can be giving all of the orders to this puppet that's out there taking one hit after another hit after another hit. Listen to the White House press spokeswoman as she's being interviewed by Don Lemon. I mean, this is Don Lemon of CNN. Listen to how this exchange goes down. Clip three.
Does the president have the stamina, physically and mentally, do you think, to continue on even after 2024?
Don, you're asking me this question. Oh, my gosh. He's the president of the United States. You know, I can't even keep up with it. We just got back from New Mexico. We just got back from California. That is not a question that we should be even asking. Just look at the work that he does. Look how he's delivering for the American public.
I can't believe it, Don. I mean, you're CNN. You shouldn't even be asking this. Does he have the stamina to go on? He's not even 2 years into his presidency. Does he have the stamina? Can he endure? Can he make it through? Forget about re-election in 2024. Can he even make it through these 4 years? And there she is. She's just beside herself. Don, you're not supposed to be asking this. He asked it. To his credit, he asked it. You heard him in the montage a moment ago. He's one of many at CNN that he's there scratching his head going, what is going on? There was this interesting and very revealing soundbite going around by Hunter Biden. Yet another, I guess it's something like 77 minutes where our team's going through it even as we speak. But this shorter bit made its way around social media. And this is, again, from Hunter's laptop. And Hunter's laptop, by the way, we should call it the Biden laptop, because really what it exposes is the Biden crime family. And who's at the top of the family? That would be the big guy. The big guy is Joe Biden. The big guy, all of Hunter and his team, they were paying Joe Biden's bills. They were doing this for Joe. They were giving him his 10% cut, some maybe higher than that, as they were going all around the world with this massive pay-for-play scheme, pulling in money from Chinese communists, from oligarchs in Russia. And that's right, Joe Biden's at the very top. It's the laptop, again, they've finally come around after 14, 15 months, the communists and the media, to admit that it did come from Hunter Biden. But when you look at everything that these radicals are doing, they're still in power. They're still in power. And I know we can look at the bitter affliction and say, how long, just like Habakkuk said, how long is this going to go on, God? But when you look at every step that they're taking, even the joke that is this January 6th committee, it seems now, we're at a point now where every move they make, it backfires. How will, let's go after Donald Trump on a criminal referral. How is that going to backfire? How, covering up the Hunter Biden laptop, look at how that's backfiring. Listen to this. I don't know who the woman is that he's talking to, whether she's a prostitute or one of his drug friends or whatever. But this is Hunter Biden basically saying, you know what? Yeah, anything I tell my father, he's going to believe and he's going to endorse. He's going to actually work it into his agenda. This is from Hunter Biden, who's had a lifelong addiction to cocaine, who's had a lifelong addiction to partying with drugs and prostitutes and who knows who else. And he filmed himself doing a lot of this. And a lot of that's on his laptop, the laptop that they tried to cover up because they had to get Joe Biden into office. Do you think they didn't cheat? There was cheat. The media. Cover the media covering things up. That's all part of the cheating. That's all part of the steal. They had to cover those things up to scoot him on through. As I say, there were multiple ways in which they pulled off the steal. But listen to this from Hunter Biden. This is December 3rd, 2018. It comes from the Hunter Biden laptop, clip nine.
He'll talk about anything that I want him to, that he believes in. If I say this is important to me, then he will work a way in which to make it a part of his platform. Mm. My dad respects me more than he respects anyone in the world, and I know that to be certain. So it is not going to be about whether my dad thinks it's going to affect his politics. No, it won't. Everyone else thinks it talks about how can you be as good as your dad? I'm better than my dad. Mm-hmm. You know why I'm better than my dad? Because my dad tells me I'm better than him since I was 2 years old. So all of those fears that you think that I have of people not liking me or that I don't love myself, I don't fear that. You know why I don't fear that? Because the man I most admire in the world, that God to me, thinks I'm a God. And my brother did too. And the three of us, it was literally, I had the support to know I can do anything.
Wow. So his dad is a God to him. And he's a God to his father. And anything he brings up, anything he puts in his father's ear, that's going to be part of the Biden platform. Well, consider what I should have gotten that clip from Biden himself a couple years ago, Joe Biden, where he said that Hunter Biden was the smartest man that he knows. The smartest man. And so here's Hunter Biden basically acknowledging, my dad is a puppet. That's right. He does anything and everything I tell him to do. You know who else knows this about Joe Biden? That would be Barack Obama. He knows, going in, his preferred candidate back in 2020 was Kamala, but she was so unpopular. She was so dreadfully unpopular that they had to put install Joe Biden. Remember, Kamala wouldn't work out. Bernie Sanders would have won the primary, but Obama had to get him out of the way. And he positioned Joe Biden, the perfect puppet, an empty suit, if ever there was one, the perfect puppet that he could pull the strings on. And then, of course, he brings Kamala, not Hillary. He brings Kamala in to be the vice president. Should Joe Biden ever take the fall? There he's got someone in Kamala Harris who was the most left-wing. She's communist through and through. She's more left-wing than Bernie Sanders. People don't think this about her, but she is. So Obama's, again, every move they make is backfiring, but Obama is still working. That's what we've got to see here. Obama is still behind the scenes. And that clip, have you heard wall-to-wall coverage on that clip? What if Don Jr. was caught on video a couple years before Trump came in 2017, and he was saying, you know what, and let's suppose DJ had all kinds of drug history and womanizing with prostitutes, which he doesn't, but suppose he had all of that baggage, then he's on film or audio saying that, yeah, whatever I tell my dad, he basically does it. He worships me like a god. This is the president of the fake one at that, the president of the United States. It's again, I just sometimes shake my head. How can you not? When you look at these daily stories in the news cycle, when you consider some of this shocking audio, and then the way that the media, so many of them in the media, still do everything that they can to try to cover it up. Listen to Joe Biden. This was from a couple days ago. I didn't get to it yesterday because I wasn't on the air. But this is him speaking at he's still out there trying to convince Americans that everything in America is going perfect. It's just perfect. This is clip one.
Do you remember when our economy was like what it looked like before we took office? 3,000 Americans are dying every day from COVID. 20 million Americans had lost their jobs on the last guy. In fact, so many Americans lost their jobs that my predecessor became just the second president in history to leave office with fewer jobs in America than when he took office. And what has to be done? Well, we brought down COVID deaths by 90%. We opened schools and businesses that were shuttered. It all created the greatest job recovery in American history. People don't want to talk about these days, but it's true. Since I've become president, we've created 8.7 million new jobs in 16 months, an all-time record. Since I took office, with your help, families are carrying less debt nationwide. They have more savings nationwide. Jobs and companies are coming home again. We're making Buy American a reality, not just a slogan. This year, by the end of the fiscal year, we will have cut the federal deficit by another 1.5 $1.6 trillion in 1 year. I don't want to hear any more of these lies about reckless spending. We're changing people's lives. The problem is, Republicans in Congress are doing everything they can to stop my plans to bring down costs on ordinary families. My plan is simple. First, I'm doing everything in my power to blunt Putin's gas price hike. But the fact is, Republicans in Congress are still in the grip of the ultra-MAGA agenda. I travel the world trying to put things back together. You know, Trump did not leave a very good situation.
Trump didn't. Of course, it's Trump's fault. The Republicans, some of his handlers are now coming out saying that it's the Republicans' fault for the skyrocketing inflation because we didn't pass Build Back Better. If only we could have spent trillions more, that would solve the inflation crisis. So he's out there, but hey, don't take it from me. CNN's not buying it. Neither is the United States of America. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show here on the road in Guymon, Oklahoma. We'll conclude today's show with a Bible study segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
I recently finished the prayer book, How to Pray. And if you don't have a copy of that, you can look at our website, thetrumpet.com, or call our toll-free number. Maybe the guys can post that at the lower third there. But our operators are standing by. A great book. If you're looking for some instruction to really bring energy and more fervency to your prayer life, How to Pray is certainly the way to go. Let's just look briefly at the prayer outline in Matthew 6. This again, this is instruction that Jesus gave to us. It was meant to be an outline, not just something that we vainly repeat, as the world calls it, the Lord's Prayer. It's not even the Lord's Prayer. John 17 records that. But it definitely is an outline that Jesus wanted for us to benefit from. This is how we're to organize our prayers. Matthew 6, verse 5, it says, "And when you pray, you shall not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray, standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, enter into your closet, and when you have shut the door, pray to your Father, which is in secret, and your Father, which sees in secret, shall reward you openly." So God will reward you for what you do in private. Pray in your prayer closet. For the most part, there's certainly a time for for more public prayers, like over meals or over meetings and church services. But even there, God generally gives us a certain amount of privacy, a private room for our services and such. But we're not to make a big self-righteous display of it. But Jesus said we are to pray, and to pray daily. That's even brought out in this outline. Verse 7, it says, "But when you pray, use not vain repetitions, as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Be not you therefore like unto them, for your Father knows what things you have need of before you ask him." So God knows. He knows in advance what we need. He knows before we ask him. So why would he want for us to ask him? Because he wants an intimate relationship with his children. Because he wants to talk with, to speak with, to converse with his children, his family. God the Father is a family man. God is a father, after all. And we are his children. I won't take the time to get into the hundreds and hundreds of verses, passages in the Bible that I could go through to point to the fact that God is a family. It runs all through the Bible. And we've covered some of those subjects before. But coming back to this close, intimate contact with God, he wants to see his children praying earnestly, offering up petitions and supplications before his heavenly throne. This is from my father in the Royal Vision back in 2012. He says, "What is God going to think if we say, well, this is a busy day, and I'd like to get some more prayer in, but I just don't have the time. I'm going to have to cut back on my prayers. What does your father think about that? He wants the best sacrifice you can give. If you don't give it, you're going to have a lot of trouble," my father says. "And if you give it, you're going to have success beyond your imagination." Wow, what a difference. What a contrast. If we don't make these daily sacrifices in our prayer closet, we're going to have a lot of trouble. But if we do, and if it's in a right attitude and spirit, if it's offered fervently and effectually, then what a difference it will make. You're going to have success beyond your imagination. Just drop down to verse 13 now. I won't take the time to go through all the various sections of the prayer outline. But notice one admonition in particular. Verse 13, it says, "And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." That word temptation there, it actually means a sore trial or a test. Lead us not into a sore trial or test. And when we do come upon them, God, please deliver us. Please deliver us from these trials, from these difficulties, from these obstacles. And God is there waiting to do it. He knows we need deliverance. And yet he's waiting for us to appeal to his heavenly throne room, to pray for deliverance. Notice from How to Pray, it says, "God does permit us to fall into trials and troubles of our own or the devil's devising if we're not keeping close to him and seeking his guidance and help every day." It says, "Ask God to deliver you from Satan, society, and self." Ask him to deliver you. If you go through this prayer outline, you can see basically seven different requests or petitions that God says, or that Jesus said, "Look, here's your outline. Here are seven basic requests and petitions that you ought to have in your prayer outline." And of course, seven, as many of you know, is the number of completion. So this is a complete outline. But I just want to emphasize to you, I want to stress here for the moment, that one of the seven has to do with delivering us from the sore trial and test, or providing us with the protection that we need daily. Pray for that way of escape. Pray for God's timely intervention. Pray for protection. You know, even when you do some drive, I've done more driving this summer than I have in years, with the trip out to Arizona and then up to Rapid City and then down through these small towns, basically, in western Nebraska and Kansas and now Oklahoma. And every day, I mean, just little things. you see just how much you need God's help and protection, just how much you need God's intervention, even in the smallest of ways. And we need to be in constant contact with God. We need to be instant in prayer. As soon as something goes wrong, or as soon as we need help or deliverance from something, we obviously have the extended prayer session in our closet in the morning to begin the day. But then throughout the day, certainly if you're driving by yourself, you need God's help. You need God's protection. We need to be safe in this very dangerous world. Do you pray for protection, for God's intervention, for God's deliverance on a daily basis? How often do you pray for God to deliver you from temptation? In fact, the outline, by the way, it says deliver us. And so built into that outline admonition is the fact that we should be praying for others. We know about others in the family of God who are going through struggles and tests and trials. Do we pray for them? Do we pray for God to intervene on their behalf? Do we pray for God to deliver all of us from our adversary, the devil? As I've said quite a few times now, you listen to some of those old sermons by Worldwide Church of God ministers from back in the 1970s, 1980s, and you think of how many of them, so many of them, have surrendered to the devil. And you see some today, even that have worked their way into God's family, even that have worked their way into God's church, you see them surrendering to the devil and his devices. We've got to pray. What did that quote bring out? To pray for deliverance, for guidance, for God to deliver us from Satan, society, and self, even ourselves, because we're so weak, because the pulls of carnal nature are so strong. And so it goes without saying, every day, as part of that prayer of deliverance, we're praying for God to give us the strength, the discipline, the temperance, the moderation, the faith that we need to stand against Satan and society and self, to not just go along, to not capitulate, not even in little areas. Because look at what happened on a mass scale with respect to so many of those ministers in the Laodicean churches. They stood up for the truth. They fought for the truth in the late 70s and early 80s. And then as soon as Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, so many of them just surrendered to their adversary, the devil. They just gave in. Luke 22 and verse 31, it says here, "And I, the Eternal, said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat." Christ here, he puts double emphasis on Peter's name. Simon, Simon, Satan's working to destroy you. Do you know this? Don't you understand that Satan wants to sift you like wheat? This is from a Worldwide News article back in 1985. This is one of those ministers of the Worldwide Church of God that eventually fell away and became Laodicean. He wrote in 1985, just 6 months before Mr. Armstrong died, he said, "Often when I hear of terrible accidents and tragedies befalling even Christians, I wonder if they may have unwittingly denied themselves this protection simply by failing to ask for it. I urge you not to make that mistake. Don't take it for granted. Every time you get out on the road, every time you head into the city, whenever it is, you turn the bolts at on your doors at the end of the day. Don't take it for granted. Bring God into it. Pray for God to protect you, your family, God's family, your things, your belongings, everything." He says, we're all human and regularly prone to human error of the physical and mental or spiritual kind. Sometimes the consequences are trivial, such as tipping over a glass of water, but sometimes the consequences are fatal. It says here, to complicate matters, there is an evil one, an adversary, a destroyer, Satan the devil. Jesus told his disciples that Satan wanted to sift or grind them like wheat. Satan would love to capitalize on your errors and lapses of judgment. And sometimes he does. He'd love to capitalize on those errors in judgment, and we all have them. We all have our weak points, as I say. the fight against Satan, society, and self. We need God's power. If we have God's power, well, the Bible says we can do all things, Philippians 4:13. If we have God's power, we can obey the commandments of God. If we have God's power and we're submitted to God in prayer and we resist against our adversary, the devil, the Bible says that Satan will flee from us. Verse 32, it says, but I, this is after Jesus said to him, Simon, Simon, this, Satan wants to destroy you. And then Jesus says, but I have prayed for you that your faith fail not. And when you are converted, it says, strengthen the brethren. See, Jesus said, look, I've given you some help, whether you realize it or not. I've prayed for you that you fail not. A lot of people need this intercessory prayer. They need us praying for them that they fail not. He went on to tell Simon, now when you're converted, when you receive the Spirit of God, you make sure that you strengthen the brethren. You make sure that you support the brethren, that you pray for the brethren. Notice James, or John rather, the Gospel of John, chapter 17. I'll just finish with a few verses over here. But in the prayer booklet, firstly, it says, Jesus prayed this night before he was crucified while under the agony and pressure of that imminent brutality. This is the prayer from John 17 that we're about to read. It says, if you want an example of how to pray while in a trial, study this chapter. Study this chapter of John 17, and you see just how unselfish and outflowing his love for others really and truly was. John 17, 11, it says, and now I am no more in the world. This is part of Christ's prayer the night before he's crucified. I'm no longer in the world, but these are in the world. And I come to you, Father, Holy Father, keep through your own name those whom you have given me, that they may be one as we are one. Keep the unity in the family of God, Father. Keep the unity, that family unity. It says here in verse 14, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. So the world hates God's truth. The world hates God's family. And listen, more and more persecution is going to be coming on this church, on the message coming out from the trumpet.com. And we've got to prepare ourselves for it. Satan hates this truth. Look at what he's doing to our nation. Look at what he's doing to America. He wants to blot out this church. He'd do it if he could. But Jesus has prayed for us. Jesus is our advocate, our intercessor, our high priest. He's offering the same kinds of prayers that he offered for Peter. I've prayed for you. I've prayed that God would strengthen you. Notice verse 16. Or verse 15, it says, I pray not that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. Now, we have a work to do in this world. We've got to stay strong and proclaim God's gospel message. We've got to proclaim that warning message, that bitter and sweet message, like it says at the end of Revelation 10. But we need protection and safety, and God is there to give it. God will provide it for his family. Verse 16 says, they're not of the world, even as I'm not of the world. Sanctify them through your truth. Your word is truth. Set them apart, God says. Set them apart, Christ prayed, by the truth of God. Sanctify them. Preserve them. Keep them. Keep them strong. Keep them protected. Keep them within the safety, in the bounds of God's family. This is Jesus praying. The night before he was crucified, this is Jesus praying, not even just for the disciples of his day. He's praying here for you and for me. I mean, that shows just how much we need to be praying that prayer of protection and deliverance. We'll carry on with this subject next time that we have an opportunity for a Bible study segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. And this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, the email address, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.